Blog Talk Hello. Radio.
Hello, this is Victory Celine coming to you live for Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. If we pretend. Number one, there is justice. Number two, the system just needs mending. Then, we remain political slaves and we are lost. News analysis. An anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism, imperialism, i.e., an anatomy of the American capitalist system. Ralph Pointer, Tom Syracuse, Joel Myers, Gwen Goodwin, Nelly Bailey. Updates from the political prisoner death camps, Suzanne Ross and the Teresa Scotch. Liberation of poetry, Raymond Nat Turner, in remembrance of Sister Lynn.
Good morning, my brothers and sisters. Good evening, my brothers and sisters. Once again, we are back in the quest to bring our political prisoners home. Now, we have talked about political prisoners and why they are political prisoners. But this evening, we are going to, let me repeat, review what Brother Victor Esseline has told us. If we pretend there is justice, if we pretend the system just needs mending, then we remain political slaves. We are lost. And what we do is we do these pretensions all of the time. To wit, every gardener, all we need is a federal prosecutor. The Iraq War. And if you tell the truth about it, as two of the people in England have told the truth about it, the meeting between Blair and Bush, one is in jail and the other is going around the world telling it. Fake news. Propaganda of the worst kind. Do we need to repeat the overthrow of Haiti? Do we need to talk about the overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran? Do we need to talk about the overthrow of the government of Honduras? Apparently we do. And I'm wondering, is there anyone anywhere in the world who was not aware of the American intervention in foreign governments? Is there anyone in America who has not learned about the Monroe Doctrine? Is there anyone who does not know what that means? And the truth is, we are all pretending that there is a justice, that there is a system that only needs mending. We have the big news today is Congress is going to question Mueller on the Russian interference in American politics. All of that is make pretend. Question one, who gives a damn? Question two, did the Russians create the racism and all of the other negative isms that America is to make Trump popular? Ridiculous. We have to examine what America was based on. And I'm not going to go into it. You may be tired of hearing the words, the death of the indigenous people, slavery, imperialism, continued oppression of people of color, oppression of the poor. What our job is to wake up people, to make them understand and stop being involved in the pretending. When those people who come up to me and say, do you know what Trump has done recently? Well, I don't know. I don't care. And when he makes statements such as he makes, all he's doing is pandering to his base, which is racist, imperialist. I don't give a damn as long as I think it is making it better for me. Make America great again. Ask someone who says it what they mean. They'll say things like, we'll make things good again, but every now and then, you'll get someone who will give you an honest answer. Let's have the free labor of people in death camps. Let's have the continued oppression of people of color in the inner cities. Let's have, they call it, let us end liberal speech, or let us end speech of correctness, on and on and on. What it means is let's go back to a period where the Klan was big in 30 state houses, and when with all of what that means. Let us go back to a time when a person was afraid to be themselves if they were gay. Let us go back to a time when there were no unions, and so on and so on and so on. We all know what it means, and what we're saying is our issue, our special issue, is we want to support those people who understood many years ago what we didn't understand and acted upon it. We want people to support those people who were imprisoned due to their political acts. We recently celebrated the MOVE people in Philadelphia. Janet, Janine, 41, 42 years in the death camp. And what were they talking about? Save the water, save the air, save the land, save the animals. And they did great time. But the amazing thing is they came out of the death camps with their heads held high and unfazed by time in the death camps. What we have to do on the outside is what a friend of mine told me a long time ago. I'm talking about people who have not been put in the death camps for their political activity. So Jules Semmel said to me, Ralph, the greatest thing to do is live well and fight them. That hurts them the most, when they see that you are out here fighting them. While we feel that fighting them is telling the truth and organizing.
I don't know what you mean by.
For supporting our political prisoners. And so, without further ado, we're going to have a guest on the program, and Sister Betty is going to introduce our first guest.
Well, I see that one of our favorite speakers is here tonight, and we're so happy to have him back with us. So if you don't mind, because he has been under the weather of late, we're going to start off with Brother Tom Syracuse of the Green Party. Welcome back, Brother Tom. We're so happy to have you on the air.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be home from the hospital, and I'm happy to take part in the blog.
Continue with your words of wisdom, Mr. Syracuse.
I would just like to point out that unless people really know about the history of this country, they are not going to be aware of the huge conflict between our famous pronouncements in our history. For example, in the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And now we have a huge immigration problem. And I would like to read you the poem on the Statue of Liberty, written by Emma Lazarus. She was born in New York City of a wealthy family descended from Sephardic Jews. And this is something that it seems that the present government, although this is nothing new, has chosen to ignore completely. She wrote, this is on the Statue of Liberty, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. And of course, in reality, the only time that this country allowed many, many people from Europe, not from Asia or Africa, from Europe, to immigrate to this country was at the needs of the Industrial Revolution. There was a scarcity of labor to work in the factories. And then there was the when the Great Depression hit the United States, there was no longer a need for immigrants of that number. There was huge unemployment. And so it goes. Today, there is there are actually, according to Trump, there are a flood of undocumented immigrants trying to come into the United States. This is not true. Number of immigrants trying to get into the United States has actually decreased. And the reason that these undocumented immigrants are coming here in the first place, that's not because they want to come here. It's because our foreign policy, our trade policies, such as in Latin America, has made them impossible to live there, especially small farmers. They head out to the big cities in their countries where there's a huge amount of unemployment, and they can't find work there, and they know that coming to this country, they're going to face prejudice and super exploitation, but they have no choice, and so they come here. Now, until people realize the huge conflict, the huge hypocrisy between what we say we believe in and what we do, then this problem will never be solved. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Tom. And we must also include in that the overthrow, the military overthrow of government must be considered in order to put in office folks who will rape their country to spend or to make profit for American corporations, therefore leaving nothing, leaving little for infrastructure. Amen.
Okay, we're going to detour from a bit because you know this is about political prisoners, and we welcome Brother Tom, and we are so glad to have him back. And we're going to go to Philadelphia, and we're going to visit a family member of Russell Maroon Schultz. I know you've heard about this incredible warrior who actually managed to escape from prison, an incredible political prisoner, an author, and a true, true believer in freedom. Sister Teresa, your mic is open, and welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, because this is such a crucial time for my family and I. My father, Russell Shooks, who's presently, well, next month he'll be 76 years of age. He's housed at a Pennsylvania prison, SCI Dallas. And presently, my dad is battling cancer. Some years ago, about 6 years ago, he had developed prostate cancer. And we're not sure if it had spread it, even after treatment, the cancer had spread it, and he just didn't know. But early, the early part of May 2019, he woke up and he was unable to hold down any water, and he was rushed off to the hospital. Now, let me go back to some part of his history, because he is a political prisoner. Yes, he liberated himself twice from prison. My dad had always maintained that he was innocent, and that if he was going to be incarcerated in the manner he was in, because he had spent so many years in solitary confinement, almost 28 years. He had spent decades there. And he was determined not to remain in prison until he was held down in that fashion. I do want to let people know that because of when he liberated himself, first in the 70s and then in the 80s, the solitary confinement for all those decades wasn't because of the escapes. It was actually because he had been voted the first black president to lead a prison-approved lifers, an all-white lifers group. And my dad just somehow threw himself into one of their meetings, which they did not want him in the meeting. He was called all kind of niggers. And until my dad explained to them the financial, the economic situation that they were in and that all prisoners were in who were housed at that facility, that they were all facing the same circumstances. For whatever the case, they were all on the same level. And he ended up being voted the first black president that evening of this all-white lifers group. And the next day, the warden, the superintendent, came in and said, take back the vote. We will not have this nigger as president of this group that I approve for you guys, or I'll dismantle the group. And they all went on a hunger strike. And with that type of reaction from this all-white group, the Pennsylvania DOC was frightened, as you can imagine. And my daddy was transferred from that prison in Pittsburgh and housed in a solitary confinement unit where he stayed for almost 3 decades. It was never because of the escapes. He had served his time in the hole for the escapes. It was because he had became the first black president of this group. And now this man that so many of us admire, of course, I love my dad with everything, and it's the reason why we are fighting right now to not only keep him from being transferred to a Pennsylvania facility, a Department of Corrections facility where they have their own chemo center. Now, I don't know about anyone out there, but for me, I don't know what the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections chemo center looks like, nor what the treatment is going to be like. So we're going to ask folks to come on board. We've been going back and forth with the DOC in reference to keeping him where he is. And I'm going to leave it open for questions, but if you need me to go on about what's going on, we presently just want him to stay. He's 2 hours away from Philadelphia. We don't want to travel 8 hours to a chemo treatment prison center. The cancer, he has stage 4 cancer. And
well,
this is the first. Yes.
We need you to tell us what people can do, what numbers they can call, who they can write to. I know you have a website. You need to let them know about that. And we need you to know that you can call in as often as you like to update us and give us our marching orders.
And I would like to add that he is indeed a very dangerous incarcerated person to the system. He educates. And those who educate successfully are our teachers. And when we listen to our teachers, things change. And this is a government that doesn't want change. And so give us your website. Give us the information that we can support you with.
And I would like to say to our panel who are on the line, your mics are all open. If you want to chime in and make a comment, as soon as she finishes giving us this information, you can do so. We want the last 4 digits, 1331. And once everybody stops making their comments to Sister Teresa, we'll give you a few minutes to speak. That's 1331, the last digit. Go ahead, Sister Teresa.
So there's a global network newsletter, Russell Maroon Show's newsletter, that we're going to put out more information in reference to Maroon's present illness and what the fight that we're going to try to do to have him released. But my personal number here is 267-456-7882. And there's an email number, T is in Tom, I is in ice cream, Y is in yellow, E is in Eddie, 1120@gmail.com.
Well, thank you so much for that, Teresa. And we will be calling you to get more information so that we can act in concert with you to free Russell Maroon Schultz.
All right. Our number, last 4 digits, 1331. Did you want to make a comment? Okay, the first 3 numbers are 484. Okay, we're going to move on. Is Sister Suzanne Ross in the house yet? Because we had promised her she's got to get up early. They're having a car caravan to the Pennsylvania Correction Center, and we want people to be able to get up early in the morning and meet the caravan. They're going to be gathering at 31st Street and JFK Boulevard. Yes, did I hear someone chime up? Speak up. Okay, then we're going to move on. Sister Nellie Bailey of Black Agenda Report is in the house, and she's going to be giving us a very important update. Sister Nellie, thank you. I know you rushed home to be able to give us this update. Once again, folks, one of the people with the Black Agenda Report. Sister Nellie, your mic
thank
is
you,
open.
Thank you very much, Betty and Ralph. Quickly, my report is that last week we talked about the number of African immigrants that are showing up at the Mexican border, and the update on that is recently 1,000 African immigrants were arrested at the Mexican border. And also the Trump administration has issued a new edict that if you pass through another country, and remember people who are coming from Africa are not taking the dangerous route over the Mediterranean Sea, they are flying into Brazil and walking through Colombia, trying to get to the Mexican border, but many of the African immigrants are seeking refugee status. As we said last week, there is a sizable community of Africans, mainly from Angola and I believe Mozambique, who are in Portland, Maine, which has a very low population, a lot of folks who are aging out. And obviously, not obviously, but rather these folks are seen as a cheap labor pool for that state. So anyway, Trump issued this edict that if you pass through another country, you cannot seek refugee status, asylum here in the United States, and obviously it's aimed at the Africans. And curiously enough, the one network that has reported on African refugees at the border has been none other than Fox News. So what does that tell you? Very quickly, that's my report. I'm sorry I came in late. I do think it's important that we discuss at some point, hopefully next week, what's going on in Puerto Rico. We had half a million, or was it a million people that showed up in Old San Juan in protest against the governor, who was one of the participants in the very vulgar, homophobic, and text messages that the alternative media center was able to put out. But the refugee crisis of African immigrants or migrants is not going to go away. We also have to take in consideration that 200,000 Haitians, even Haitians born in the Dominican Republic, were expelled. And we have to ask, what about those children? Where are they? And those Haitians are part of the migrants that are showing up at the Mexican border as well. So that's my report.
Thank you so much for that, Nellie. But what these events show us, it is the history of America not told. It's the anti-immigrant of color that has always been a part of the American political system. And so when you say that the Haitians are being African people of African descent who are being singled out beyond the outrageous situation that we have regarding immigrants, we know who's going to be hit the hardest. Those folks of color. Thank you so much for that, Nellie. And as I mentioned in the opening, interference in foreign governments to steal. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Can I
Nellie.
Just say very quickly that, folks, if you want to know what's going on in Puerto Rico, please log into Black Agenda Report and Black Agenda Radio. I have a very extensive interview with labor leader and organizer Danny Vila, and it is packed with information, including the impeachment process that has been set into motion by the leader of the House of Representatives in Puerto Rico, and that is Johnny Mendez. And so things are moving pretty quickly, and what has unfolded already is the massive corruption, including just recently $15.5 or $7 million that was stolen from the feds, in which eight people in the governor's administration was arrested the same week as the text messages were revealed publicly. So it is a fascinating story, but these bad boys here, this imperialist oligarchy here, isn't about to let Puerto Rico go, because it will be another tourist destination and another backyard of U.S. imperialism. Thank you,
Ralph. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that, Nellie. And we know about the work, the great work of Danny Avila, and we supported him in his political bid for office in this New York that we live in. Sister Betty.
Yeah, we're going to throw the mics open at this point. If anyone wants to comment on any of the themes that we've discussed so far before we go to the next segment of the program, all mics are open.
And those people, I spared time for those people to speak, and so I'm going to go back to my old policy of talking about what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media, and because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And now I'm going to expand on what I cut short. Is somebody cutting in there? Hello? Now I'm going to expand on what I cut short on at the beginning of the program. And as the program said, if we pretend there is justice, if we pretend the system just needs mending, then we remain political slaves. We are lost. And when people say, well, let's take the issue to the UN, I say, well, let's look at Palestine. Let's look at Israel. Let's look at Haiti. Let's look at Iran. Let's look at Iraq. The people who run the UN are the people who are destroying the world. And I say very clearly, what is the UN? The UN is the organization of European nations that colonize the world for their own purposes. And so they set up a body which they control. You have veto power on the part of China and Russia. But basically, the UN is there to continue the imperial designs of European nations. And it goes on and on and on. And if we say, we need a special prosecutor, well, we look at Eric Garner and all of the people who were murdered with no punishment to the army of occupation that we call the police, that has been killing people in this country since day one. And if we look at the situation in Iran today, It didn't start yesterday. It didn't start with Trump. It started a long time ago when the American government and the British government didn't like the idea that Iranian oil was to be used for the benefit of Iranian people. They talk about America exports democracy, America exports colonialism. Iran had a democracy. They elected an official who was going to work for the people of Iran. Mossadegh came. The U.S. had a coup, overthrew him, and put in the Shah of Iran, who was most despicable in terms of torture, murder, etc. But that was great for the American corporations, and the American people go right along with that, and they go right along talking about freedom and justice. When they say, make America great again, that's what they're talking about. Is that you, Nellie?
Ralph, yeah, may I just add something to that? Because you really are given a world view, which is what we don't receive that often from the so-called left. But when you look at the realignments that are taking place globally, when one considers China's Belt and Road Initiative that will cut through, that will cross Southeast Asia, it will go through parts of the Middle East on to Africa, creating vast new markets for China. There was an article recently that put China's growth at 25% already. That's how things are moving so quickly. Pakistan has gotten out of the European Union as well as NATO, and the realignments are taking place so rapidly, and Israel increasingly has found itself on the outs. And finally, thank goodness for that, they are attacking relentlessly the investment divestment movement, but it's to no avail because they are isolated. And Trump knows, despite his bellicosity, that his base will not tolerate another war. Those white men and women going into the war, because our kids know better now, they're not doing that. This is not an economic draft anymore where people are going on their own, because they know you can be killed, whether it's Nigeria, Afghanistan, or whatever. So I think this is a quagmire for the U.S., and if they think that Iran is going to be a pushover like Iraq it's not going to be the case. It's not going to be the case at all. And Trump can mouth all of this stupid, illogical stuff that he wants. But the world is changing. And sanctions and people, look, the Middle East, Russia and China are moving toward a global financial system of de-dollarization, where the dollar will no longer be the global currency. And then what are these people going to do? Because that's what sanctions is all about. It is about the might of the dollar. And we know if they don't have the might of the dollar, they're going to be looking at the might of the military. But that's not going to go down. Africa is moving in a very different direction, somewhat cautiously, as we say, cautiously, but things are changing. The global realignment is real.
Well, I want to interject something here. I want to get back to something Teresa Schultz said. She said Russell was not being punished for escaping. Russell Maroon Schultz is being punished because he knew how to link up with the underclass, the European American underclass in this country. That is extremely dangerous. If there is an alliance between the underclass of African Americans and the underclass of European Americans, the upper class, no matter what color they are in trouble, and that's what makes Russell Maroon Schultz and the political prisoners in the death camp so very dangerous. That's what made Sister Lynn dangerous. That's what makes Mamiya dangerous. And the fact that they
that's
are
right.
principled and will not take back their moral position on freedom is really, really a threat to this oligarchy.
I'd like to add to that. This
Class
is nothing.
Struggle.
Continue, Nellie. This is nothing
no,
new.
I was just agreeing with both you and Betty. It's about class struggle, and that is taking place all around the world. I mean, people are waking up because the reality, the objective reality on the ground, leaves them no other choice. And whether it's political prisoners, whether it's the gulag here or in any other country, people are making the connection. And thank you, Sister Betty.
Many years ago, I'm talking back in the 60s, before many of the people who we hear this were born, a woman named Queen Mother Moore told me as we were standing on 134th Street off of Lenox Avenue, and she says, look up at the windows there, Ralph. The windows are no longer there today. The buildings have been raised, new buildings have been built, and different people have been put in them. But she says, look up there. And she would always ask me, what are you learning? And I would always say, tell me what I should learn. And get this, we'll say 1965. She says, if you could convince everybody in those buildings to throw their TVs out the window Saturday night, Monday morning, they would have new televisions for free, because the government needs that instrument in their homes to continue to lie to them, to continue to give them false images. And I've been thinking about that ever since she said it, because when she said it, you know, that was something. The government would give them a new TV free by Monday morning. They have that instrument in our homes. We're still paying for it. And if you dare turn on the TV to hear the nonsense that goes on in, as I call them, that ignorant box that is being fed to our people, when I see that, when I hear the news, the Channel 5 news, I just shrug my shoulders. And I says, well, Queen Mother saw it, she knew what it would do, and she understood what it is doing to our people, to all people today. I like to think of Sister Betty talking to one of her colleagues of many years, and she was saying the trash that they put on this ignorant box and call it black TV, a black entertainment. A friend confessed to her, she says, yes, it is terrible. When the young people come home, I quickly turn it off because I'm ashamed to be looking at this trash. Well, then when the young people come home, they turn that trash on, and it goes in their heads and stays in their heads.
And this is why I want to commend people like Tom Syracuse and those of you who stood with us when we fought for community control of the public education system, because no democracy can thrive without a public education system. The whole point of a public education system is that you learn history so you don't have to repeat it. You may have to learn from several different perspectives, but at least you can connect some of the dots with a public school education. You will not get that with a charter school. You will not even get that with a religious school, I'm sorry to say. Therefore, they knew what they are doing when they are shutting down the public schools in the black community. In Brooklyn, many of our public schools are under siege in the black school districts.
Don't get me started, Sister Betty, on public schools. But you have gotten me started because we must remember that the public schools belong to the public if you are not of color. In the white communities, it takes a 10th grade education to be able to be on the school board, vote on the control contracts, the whole nine yards. But in the black communities, the public money is run by whatever political party is in charge, Democrat or Republican, and neither party has acted interest of people of color. And I speak about New York State and New York City. In New York City, which is the 20 or the 21st largest budget in the world for public education. Let me say that again. The New York City Board of Education, Department of Education budget is around the 20th and maybe the 23rd largest budget in the world. It changes. Back in the 60s, we were 60 to 70% of the school population, and we had less than 1% of the money. And it was so difficult to make people understand, and I guess we never did, make people understand that that school budget belonged to the people of that community. The education belonged to the people who had most interest in that education system. That is their children. Our politicians, and I have to say that, our Negro politicians, and I use the term Negro in a derogatory fashion, to this day are still unwilling to organize, to have a political party that truly represents the people of their community. They are involved in a political party that represents the party. And all you have to do is go to any school, and I challenge anyone to go to any school and look at the way that 21st largest budget in the world is being spent, who it is being spent with. And then look at the statistics as to what happens in those schools. And I was surprised to find out the other day a young man who came from New Orleans, and we were in a discussion, and I mentioned that in New York in 1965, you could not be a principal of a school if you were a person of color. And I explained to him what happened there and the struggle to get just a principal. I explained to him the struggle to get teachers of color hired. I explained to him the penalty that was paid by those of us who worked on this struggle. I went to jail. I went to Rock, Rikers Island. For what? Putting in the first four black principals in the system. And when I got out, I could not work because my licenses were taken, and a group from the Lower East Side came to me and asked me, what do you have against Puerto Ricans? And I says, I don't know where you would get an idea like that, that I had anything against Puerto Ricans. And they said to me, well, you never organized to put in a Puerto Rican principal. And I said, this is true, and let's get started on it now. Being that I had a motor up on the Lower East Side, and we were organizing We had organizations. I was able to bring the young people together. They were gangs. As we educated them, they joined. We had a force. And they went to the Board of Education and said, Poynter is coming Monday morning, and we're going to have a Puerto Rican principal. And they said to him, tell Poynter not to come. We're going to put in a Puerto Rican principal, and his name was Fuentes. And so on and so on and so on. Those of us who operate without regard to race, religion, color, gender, age, sexual preference, very dangerous people. And the same thing that happened to Russell Maroon Schultz. When I was in Rikers Island, I was made president of the Inmates Improvement Council. We started it. We shut the place down. We are dangerous people. And so we must keep that in mind, that we must reach out to people with the truth. Sister Betty.
I just want to emphasize that when we talk about the death camps in this country, we are talking about the best and the worst of us. We're talking about the best because only someone that loves their community and loves freedom better than they love themselves would sacrifice themselves, knowing what the consequences are when you are caught. Everybody who's ever been involved in a struggle, you know it comes to a point you have to decide, am I going to do and go all the way? And our political prisoners went all the way. I cannot emphasize enough what really made Russell Maroon Schultz so dangerous. It was that he was able to speak across those lines that divide us. And if we who call ourselves the left, who are really in minimum security, cannot bridge that gap with which Brother Russell Maroon Schultz did, then we need to get him out here so he can teach us how to do it. It's as simple
as
that.
And that is exactly the urgency right now, because it's more than this is Teresa again. It's more than the illness, because he's battled a number of beatings from the guards, especially after those escapes, because he was labeled as someone trying to embarrass the state, the local, and the FBI, the federal police, the security of the prison. And it wasn't about that. It was about, you know, I'm putting my life on the line, and I'm going to do that for my people and my community. Now that I'm being warehoused, if I escape, I know I'm still putting my life on the line. So I'm giving my life all the way, not just for my people, but I'm not going to stand back and let injustice happen. He's presently now, even with this illness and beginning chemo, he's still, even after winning a victory of being released from solitary confinement and being offered money from the DOC, the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, for the way they treated him in solitary confinement, he turns around. When you speak of education, and it's what got me to where I need to tell you about the money that he received in a settlement for being housed in solitary. He didn't give any family member or any of his children or any of his grandchildren any of the money. Coming from a family of educators, he turned around and is giving the money to inmates throughout Pennsylvania, female and male inmates.
Wow.
That shows love of the people. Continue.
Right.
Well, we're
it
just
continues,
about.
And it continues through him giving each prisoner who contacts my sister or my father or myself $150 to purchase an iPad. So he has outfitted more than 100 prisoners with iPads because he said if we get an inch of internet, we are the best educators ourselves. We educate ourselves, we can teach each other, and we can break out of these prisons with education and with through these iPads.
Well, Sister
Teresa,
we want to.
Can you give me an interview? I'll call you. I'll get your number from Sister Betty. Thank you.
And I thank you all. And I will definitely because this thing hasn't hit me, but I will be in touch every week.
Please call. And if you can't call, you can delegate it to another family member. And before we go, I want to thank everybody, especially Brother Tom Syracuse. We are so happy to have you back. Sister Ann is still recovering, but she will hopefully be joining us soon because we miss her. We want to remind you, join the car caravan to deliver Mamiya's petitions to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections tomorrow morning. The caravan leaves from 31st Street and JFK Boulevard across from the Megabus in Philadelphia. You can go to mobilizationformamiya@gmail.com for more information. And we thank you so very much.
And on that note, we say goodbye for another week. Much love.
Join a car caravan to deliver.